91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. This afternoon, we discuss the status and pitfalls of probate guardianships to protect the rights and assets of elders. Good afternoon. It's Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper. Florida, with its large elderly and sometimes wealthy population, is a key part of the guardianship controversy. Many have retired to the Sunshine State and haven't family nearby. We'll speak with Dr. Sam Sugar, a founder of the nonprofit organization Americans Against Abusive Probate Guardianship. Laws were introduced with their backing in this year's legislative session to provide checks and balances on guardians. Of course, we will take your calls. Topical Currents up next after NPR and regional news.
And 7 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman, on this Monday. A good weekend, Bonnie.
Yes, good afternoon to you. And you?
Very well, very well. Well, this hour we discuss adult probate guardianships in Florida and review legislative action this session. A professional guardian is appointed to protect the rights of those deemed incapacitated. There were three bills introduced this Florida legislative session concerning them.
We'll learn more about the procedures and requirements of adult guardianship. Once appointed by a court, the probate guardians have little regulation. With us now is Dr. Sam Sugar, an activist and founder of the Americans Against Abusive Probate Guardianship, which has lobbied for reform. Welcome to you, Dr. Sugar.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
Good to have you back. You were here about a year ago. A lot's changed.
Almost
right?
Exactly a year
yeah.
ago, yes.
Let's begin, as I think we need to, with a definition of a professional guardian. Who they are, when, and why are they appointed, and by whom?
Okay. First, we want to make it clear that there are different types of guardians in the state of Florida. Our major concern is not with corporate guardians or public guardians or family guardians. We really don't have any beef with any of them. But our major concern is with the sector of guardians that are doing this strictly for profit. And in Florida, there are 1,000 total guardians in the state. 460 of them fall into that last category. And this is where we've noticed our problem. So a guardian is a substitute decision maker appointed by the court in situations when individuals appear to need help with managing their lives. That's the basic bread and butter definition of a guardian.
Tell me, Dr. Sugar, now that the legislation has been passed, it hasn't been signed, but is Florida now a leader in probate guardianship regulations?
Absolutely. In fact, Florida has been a leader. There wasn't that much wrong with the statute before we started our activism. And it was a statute that was emulated throughout the United States. Today I've had comments on our website, AAAPG.net, that this legislation is the most far-reaching reform legislation in recent memory, and it does make a lot of important changes to the guardianship regulations.
Well, we're going to get to the changes and the reforms, but when you say that Florida will now be in the forefront of reform for the guardianship program, is Florida also in the forefront of guardianship cases?
Absolutely.
Okay. Of course, with the retired retirees and so many siblings up north or children.
Well, that's one issue where families are separated, and as a result, there's family dysfunction. I refer to abusive guardianship as the ultimate punishment for dysfunctional families who can't agree on who should have the power, who should help mom and dad or grandma and grandpa. When those arguments flare up and are unresolved for long periods of time, unfortunately, people resort to hiring attorneys, and that's when all the trouble starts.
Who determines that one needs a guardian?
The only way a guardian can be appointed is through a legal process, and that legal process has definite steps. When you don't have a lot of resources, when you're an indigent person, anyone can come to the court and say, here's a poor person who needs this, the help of the state. But anyone can also come to a probate judge and say, judge, this wealthy person is being abused, neglected, exploited. There's a whole playbook of things, allegations, which are never proven, by the way.
And they don't have to be proven.
They are never proven. Including, for example, this horrible person who's a son or a daughter-in-law or whatever is poisoning this poor individual who's being abused. And, of course, that's all nonsense. But what that does is sets up the judge to say, well, we must intercede. And then what follows is something called an emergency temporary guardianship. And at that point, the game is over.
I'm kind of confused. In our legal system, don't things have to be proven beyond reasonable doubt that they're true before they're acted on?
That's called due process.
Yeah.
And unfortunately,
it's a criminal notion.
It is a criminal notion, but it applies in civil litigation as well as part of the rules of civil procedure as well. Due mm-hmm. process is intrinsic to our foundational aspects of liberty and democracy. Unfortunately, in this crazy situation, due process is just an afterthought. Once you have a judge who's willing to enforce an emergency temporary guardianship on an individual, that individual is dead in the law, and they are owned, can't say that forcefully enough.
Chattel.
They are chattel in the possession of this total stranger who is called a for-profit professional guardian.
And what about the judges? Do they have agendas or... could they have agendas in deeming somebody incapacitated and in need of a guardian?
Well, that's speculation. And
okay.
Speculation can get you into a lot of trouble. So I can't comment on that. We do know that there are lots of confused directions. We do know there's a lot of conflicts of interest between the various stakeholders in the system. But I'd like to believe, it may or may not be true, that there are other factors involved in how many guardianships there are being made, because the number of guardianships is going up by 15% a year.
We just want to say that we did contact the Florida State Guardian Association Committee and Board, Executive Committee. The president is Jetta Getty. And we did try to get a hold of her. We left messages, but we never got an answer. We wanted them to participate in the program today.
Dr. Sugar, can probate abuse victims sue for fiduciary negligence, or are the guardians somehow indemnified by the judge?
Well, you can, this is America. Anybody can sue anybody for anything. But the likelihood of success of those lawsuits, which we've seen over and over again, is essentially zero. Because whatever happens to a ward in guardianship is always done over the signature of a probate court judge. This judge is an administrative judge, not a justice-type judge. And it appears, at least to us, that the pathway... let me put it a different way. Senator Dietert, when she was presenting her important bill, which unfortunately died when the Senate and the House couldn't get together, called guardians a very derogatory term, cockroaches. Now, that's not a term that I would use. But she also said something very important, and that is when you are in guardianship, when your family is trying to help you, there is no complaint department. And that's what we've discovered, too. There's really nowhere to go for family members who are watching their family members, their loved ones, be abused. The mechanisms that are in place really aren't adequate. And
isn't there an elder abuse hotline?
There is. There is. And to be politically correct, let me say that in my conversations with the director of DCF, Robert Anderson, we've identified that there's a lot of room for improvement in that DCF hotline. We've had bad experiences with some of people who have called there, and what happens then is that the complainants become the victims. Instead of asking for help, they get accused. And it's a very sad state of affairs.
And they're more geared to physical abuse.
not only are they more geared to physical abuse, but unfortunately their relationships with attorneys and guardians can sometimes be a conflict of interest. We know of cases where certain agents of DCF actually receive remuneration for referral of cases to certain guardians. Remember,
how are the guardians qualify? I mean, if I wanted to be a guardian, what would I have to, what kind of training and education do I have to have?
Very little. In Florida, the Department of Elder Affairs will certify you if you can pass a test based on a 40-hour internet course. That's it. Oh, yeah, you have to have a record that says you haven't been personally bankrupt or you're a felon, although we know of at least two or three guardians who absolutely had a personal bankruptcy and were certified anyhow. But there are minimal educational requirements. Many of these people are not well-educated and certainly don't have the financial education or knowledge to handle multi-million-dollar accounts. And that's part of the problem we have. There's a movement in the legislature for next year to begin thinking about licensing them, because these guardians are not licensed. And in fact, the monitoring and oversight of them is essentially zero.
So there's no oversight, there's no regulation.
The only oversight on a professional guardian is from the judge who appointed them. You can go to the judge and say, Guardian A did X, Y, Z, which is against the statute, which is the statute designed to protect elderly people. Mm-hmm. But instead, let's say this guardian put them in chemical restraints and now they're a drooling vegetable. You can go to the judge and say that, but the judge appointed this guardian.
Right.
The judge works with these people, the lawyers and guardians, every single day. And it's a difficult system to crack.
Well, let's take a break. We're going to come back, and we are going to speak to Representative Kathleen Passidomo, who did have legislation passed in the legislature this session. We're speaking with Dr. Sam Sugar. He's a retired board-certified specialist in internal medicine and the founder of Americans Against Abusive Probate Guardianship. We'll be right back.
And we return. It is today's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and also Dr. Sam Sugar. We're talking about adult probate guardianship in Florida. We have Representative Kathleen Passidomo of Naples on the line. And before we go to Representative Passidomo, we do have some callers who are professional guardians. Just remain on the line, please, and we'll get to you.
Okay, welcome, Representative Kathleen Passidomo from Naples. It's good to have you with us.
Hello. How are you?
Hi, and congratulations on HB 5, the bill that passed. It still awaits Governor Scott's signature, correct?
Yes, it does, but I'm thrilled that it got passed, and I want to publicly thank Dr. Sugar for all that he did to make this bill a reality.
It's been called a first step to curb abuse by professional guardians. Would you explain what it is and what you hope it will accomplish?
Well, yeah, sure. First of all, believe it or not, under Florida law, there were no real standards for guardians' duties. So the first thing that we did was set them in the statute. Secondly, we, and probably one of the most important provisions, is we brought over the language from the criminal statute under the vulnerable adults. And that is, if a person abuses their ward, financial, and it's mainly financial abuse, they are subject to criminal penalties, which was not the case in the past.
What about physical or psychological abuse?
Well, those are already against the law.
Oh, okay.
But the financial exploitation, you would think, it could be considered. I mean, there obviously is if it's theft and the like, but it's hard to prove that when the assets of the ward are held by the guardian. So our biggest problem had been that the state attorneys were not pursuing these cases. Now we're giving them the tools to go ahead and file the complaints against people that do financially exploit the ward.
Does your bill provide for more than just an annual accounting to the court from the guardian?
Well, we didn't change that process. What we did, however, is, and this was actually, this has been a two-year process. Last year, we passed legislation that gave the clerks more ability to audit these accounts. It had always been in statute that the clerks could audit the accounts, but what was happening, some of the, we call them the bad guardians, and I also want to say that by and large, most guardians do a fine job, but the bad ones are really bad. And so some of those would just provide annual reports with totals. And I'll give you an example. You know, it would be $10,000 a month for the maintenance of the ward's home. And that was it. And there was no breakdown. And you would hear stories about how if you actually would look into it, it would be X for the housekeeper who was the wife of the guardian, Y for the son who was doing the lawn, and it became a cottage industry. We heard that all over the state. So what we're doing is asking the clerks to delve into these accounts and ask for details and backup information. Now they can subpoena those records to find out exactly what the breakdown of those expenses are.
Representative Pasadomo, what prompted you to write this bill?
Probably Dr. Sugar.
Hi, Kathleen.
What happened was last year, we were in judiciary, and I was presenting the bill that we passed last session, which gave the clerks the opportunity to audit the accounts. And Dr. Sugar came to judiciary along with about 10 or 15 people, if I'm not who all made presentations and really heartfelt presentations to us of the serious problem in the state of Florida with some of the professional guardians. So I heard them and I said, you know what, in this upcoming session, let's do a workshop. And I was fortunate to be appointed chair of civil justice by the speaker. So the first thing I did, the very first thing I did, was to hold a workshop on guardianship, and then the bill was a result of that workshop. You know, we heard a lot of problems and abuse in the system, and our goal was to fix it. So that's the genesis of the bill.
Our topic is adult probate guardianships in Florida. If you'd like to join in, that's easy enough. 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also, email, that's radio@WLRN.org.
According to an article in today's Palm Beach Post by John Pacenti, Fernando Gutierrez, the director of the Pinellas County Guardianship Association, said that your law will make it harder for good guardians to be appointed to hard cases. And I believe we have him waiting on the line. Are you with us, Fernando Gutierrez?
Fernando in Clearwater.
Yes, I am. I'm here. Thank you.
Okay, so what were you saying about this bill? Why will it make it harder for good guardians to be appointed to hard cases?
Well, I like to counter for some of the things that Dr. Sugar said. Yes, we do take a 40-hour class, but each year, not every 2 years, we need to have a credit check, and we have also a law enforcement background check. And we have to register with the state every single year, and we're the only fiduciary responsible position in the state of Florida that has to register every year. So if the state is doing their job, they can weed out the bad, so-called bad guardians. And the media has unfortunately not told the whole story. Yes, we have bad apples, but you can't throw out the whole bushel because there's a few bad apples. And many of us take on pro bono cases of which we don't get paid. And I can tell you for the 6th and the 13th Judicial District that we can only bill for our services every 6 months. So my question to you all and to Dr. Sugar is, what business can invoice every 6 months and stay in business? Most of us are doing this because we care about wards and patients and want to do a good job. And most of us aren't in here for the money. But I just wanted to shed light on the other side of which we have not gotten any press.
Okay. Well, I'd like to respond, and thank you very much for calling. It's a good question. And like most businesses, if you are in a business, you do your services and you'll get paid most of the time, whether it's, you know, it's not unusual to have 90 days accounts receivable or even 120 or 180 as a physician. I wish I could get paid every 6 months when I was in practice. But the difference is that there's no guarantee that I'll be paid for my services, whereas when you submit, when a guardian or an attorney in guardianship submits their bill to the court, the likelihood of you getting 100% of your bill is near certainty. And there's nothing wrong with that if all of those bills are legitimate. But what we have seen is bills for opening an email, opening a letter, bills for buying groceries that are excessive. So while I understand I'm certain there must be good guardians all over the state, our concern is not with them, and we have no problem with a number of guardianships in the state, but there are more than just a few bad apples.
Mr. Gutierrez, going along with that thought of the good apples and a bushel of goods and a barrel of one bad apple or two, what about this bill deters the good apple from staying in the business?
Well, if you have too much oversight and it makes it so complicated that you can't do business, and you ask any businessman, independent businessman, if there's so much regulation, it's no longer worth it to be in business. And physicians know this with the current Medicaid and Medicare laws that are now coming on, is that if there's so much control that you can't without abundance of paperwork and hassles do your job, then it's going to deter from people coming into the business and actually trying to be good guardians. And this is what this piece of legislation does. And it's unfortunate that the state representative didn't have more input from actual guardians and what we actually do, so they could understand the difficulties.
Can I interrupt,
that we face.
Yes, please.
Kathleen Pasadena. I take exception with that comment. Last summer, we had I put together a committee, a group of members of the Elder Law Section of the Florida Bar, Real Property Probate and Trust Law Section, guardians, attorneys who represented guardians. We had pretty much everybody across the board, and they all put in comments. That the bill that we passed was the result of comments from guardians who and their attorneys, and they signed off on it. There were some, and in fact, even until the very end, I made revisions to the bill, which Dr. Sugar didn't like, by the way, when several professional guardians came to my office in Naples and said, "You put in a provision about appointing guardians on a rotating basis. That's not going to work. It's going to be problematic." I sat down with them, and I deleted that provision. So I had an open door policy, and I had a lot of people who weighed in. And in fact, if you look at the bill, it's not adding additional regulations. It basically provides some guidance that good guardians already do. We're not making it harder for good guardians. We're making it harder for the bad apples.
Okay, and Dr. Sugar, you wanted to...
I can only agree. Our experience is what motivated our champion, Kathleen Pasadena, and I hope you don't mind me using that term, representative, but you are, along with a couple of others, Senator Diaz de la Portilla, and Senator Nancy Dietert. Mm-hmm. It didn't take long for them to figure out that there was a big problem in Florida. And it's not, of course, it's not just in Florida, and that's our next step anyhow. But yes, I agree with the representative, of course. I mean, this, once people understand what actually happens in these bad guardianships, and there are plenty of them all throughout the state and all throughout the nation, people are appalled. People are amazed. It's a state of cognitive dissonance that people cannot understand that in a court in our country, that due process doesn't exist and transparency is gone.
And, we just want to... Do you want to respond, Fernando Gutierrez?
Yeah, well, every year when we give our health plan and the financial plan, there's a question, at least in the, I'm talking about in the Sixth Circuit, and I don't know, and that's the problem. Let me address that, is that in Florida, there's no uniformity because each circuit court has their own rules and, in fact, their own compensation per hour. But at least in the Sixth Circuit, where I practice, every year we have, they ask us the question, can the ward receive their rights, and what type of rights can we give them back? So we have a chance, and we and there's already in play the ability to still give some type of autonomy to these wards. And the Sixth Circuit also has their own investigation, and I'm missing the word right now, where if there's a complaint against a guardian, they call us, and we have to submit all our paperwork, and they do their own investigation. So there is a checks and balances, at least in the Sixth Circuit.
In the Sixth Circuit, you may well be right, but, sir, if I could respectfully disagree with you about one fact, the Sixth Circuit may be in unusual circumstances with nothing but great guardians and wonderful judges and honest lawyers who only want to do the best. That's not our experience in the rest of the state, and I would say, if what you say is true and you think you're one of the good guys, and that would be great, then the people in your district are very fortunate, because there are a whole lot of other districts, and I can name them if you'd like, where nothing like that occurs, and guardianships are nothing more than a mechanism, an artifice, for the diversion of intergenerational wealth away from their legitimate heirs into the pockets of a system that is greed-based.
We're speaking about probate guardianship in Florida.
And we have more callers.
And we will take your calls. We're speaking with Dr. Sam Sugar, who is the founder of Americans Against Abusive Probate Guardianship, and Representative Kathleen Pasadomo from Naples. We'll be right back.
And 35 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, Dr. Sam Sugar, of the founder of the Americans Against Abusive Probate Guardianship. Also, State Representative Kathleen Pasadomo of Naples, who wrote SB number 5, the House Bill number 5 concerning it. Also, we have, if you'd like to join in, we haven't heard it from any listeners, Bonnie.
Yeah, our number, 1-800-743-9576. Perhaps you know of someone who is under guardianship now. Perhaps you have your own experience. 1-800-743-9576. Email is radio@wlrn.org.
And we'll take another caller. This is Steve in Plantation. Hi there.
Good afternoon. First off, I wanted to say to you that I am a professional guardian. I am an attorney, and I have been a member of the board of directors of the Florida State Guardianship Association. So I think I know a bit about what I'm talking about, and I've been working in the field for 30 years. Before we go any farther, we have to put Dr. Sugar's position fully out in front of the audience. Number one, Dr. Sugar is in this place because he had a contested matter before the courts in which he disagreed because of family disputes over the disposition of his parents' funds that were necessary to take care of that parent while under guardianship. And I suspect this was also why the case was in a professional guardianship. The most important job that a guardian has is to take care of his or her ward. And the issue of an estate plan, a will, or any other situation disposing of the ward's property while the ward is alive is not within the purview of the guardian. Our responsibility is to take care of the ward and the ward's needs using the resources that the ward has in his or her name and are placed under the guardianship. So if there's a situation where the needs of the ward might interfere with the estate plan, then it's up to the guardian to liquidate those particular assets with the approval of the court to pay for the needs of the guardianship. So I think that everybody has been sandbagged by Dr. Sugar and his organization's position on this thing. This is not a question of any bad guardians out there. We are fully regulated. In Dade and Broward County, we are monitored by the courts. We have court monitors that monitor each of the guardianships that we have. And if there's an issue about anything that is going on with the guardianships, our judges are they are perfectly happy to address it as soon as they possibly can. Now, under the circumstances, that means that you're going to be accumulating and accruing lawyers' fees, because every time somebody goes to court, there has to be lawyers representing them. So to the extent that the new legislation does clarify for our purposes how guardianship is supposed to work, we appreciate that. But the new legislation did not in any way fix Dr. Sugar's particular issue. Dr. Sugar has a pre-mortem will contest that he has set up as the substantial image that he wants to present to you as something about guardianship.
But many people have pre-mortem wills, do they?
There's no such thing as a pre-mortem will. You cannot pass will property out before the ward dies.
Except if you declare that person legally dead. And that's precisely what
is declared legally dead under guardianship. The ward is absolutely in existence, and as far as the judge is concerned, has the primary ear of the court, not the family members, and certainly so long as there's a dispute going on in the family, the judge is probably going to listen to the guardian before he's going to listen to any of the family members.
Steve, let's let Dr. Sugar respond and State Representative Posadomo.
Well, with respect, Steve, I remember you calling in exactly a year ago with the exact same argument, and our argument also still stands. As far as the court obeying pre-morbid will, our big problem, Steve, our big problem is that the courts in many districts in Florida ignore those very advanced directives. In my case, and I'm interested that you know all the details of my case, I'd really be interested in knowing how you know that. But that aside, we have seen repeatedly in every district in the state of Florida where an individual who has well-planned, well-laid-out, well-executed advanced directives, they are totally ignored against every statute and every principle of jurisprudence in order to set the freight train of guardianship in motion. There is no defense for that, and I beg to differ with you. The only people that a probate court can deal with is those who are legally dead. And by stripping away the rights of individuals who have done absolutely nothing wrong but being involved in a family dispute about power and money, and let's face it, this is America, we all do that, the probate court must declare that poor individual legally dead and throw them into the hands of a total stranger. And your defense, by saying that the judges are perfectly capable, I agree. They are perfectly capable. They just don't do it.
And Representative Posadomo, do you want to respond to Steve?
Well, it seemed that there was the discussion sort of centered around the personal issues that Dr. Sugar may have had, and I'm not familiar with that. I would say that specifying the duties of the guardians made a lot of sense because it wasn't in law. We also, one of the things that he brought up was the cost of litigation. We had in a provision that allowed for mediation, which I think would then cut down the cost of litigation. A lot of the things that we put in the bill were bearing in mind that we'd like to keep it out of the courts if at all possible. So we set up a process of if a family member objected to something, and it's sort of a process of how it would be handled. And I think when you take the bill in the totality of it, it really does move the ball forward. But there's one thing I do want to mention, and that we can have great laws. And that could, the laws are there to give the tools to the courts and the system to handle the issues. The problem is that we have an over overburdened judicial system, and oftentimes these cases aren't as heard as expeditiously as one would like because there's just so many cases. That's why we put in a provision in the bill that would require the cases dealing with restoration of rights to be given priority because, you know, the bottom line is the judicial system has to handle all the criminal stuff first.
Have you had constituent complaints, Representative?
Well, I live in Collier County where our judges are very active. But if you talk to around the state, there are concerns about the backlog of the system. And, you know, of course, it gets down to can you give us more money, legislature? And, you know, that's a whole new chapter that we haven't addressed yet.
That's exactly the issue, Representative. The problem that you have is that the system is grossly underfunded, and there is no consistency between the various circuits and districts. So that you do have, in the South, our guardianships are very well regulated. We are very well supervised. In the big cities, this is also very much true. In the smaller counties, the judges do just about everything, and most of them don't have any grounding in guardianship law. But then again, there are not that very many guardians in those areas, and there are very few professional guardians up there in the smaller counties. But the bottom line still remains the same. Everything that you do involving guardianship is a legal procedure that requires an attorney to be involved with this because you are stripping a person of their due process rights, their civil rights, and this has to be done with the utmost care. So what we ultimately have in this situation is more of an elder law attorney fiscal relief act at this stage, especially since the companion bill did not go through because the legislature went home before they could finish everything up. And right now, I'm glad that we have some changes to the laws that might clarify where we ought to be and how we should do things properly. But this does not change the financial dynamic at all until the state starts underwriting and properly financing, if you're going to have regulation, those means to properly regulate the industry, which, frankly, is a heck of a lot less financially lucrative than anybody has been talking about here.
Well, again, I'm glad that we can share the happiness that the bill passed. However, as you might expect, I take issue with much of what you've said. Inadequate funding of the judiciary is not an excuse for cold judges who don't even read motions or refuse to accept evidence of capacity in initial incapacity hearings. That's not because of lack of funding. That's for other reasons that I really don't understand. And while I understand your position, both as a lawyer and as a guardian who profits from this industry, I'm really surprised that you can't see or hear the hundreds of complaints that have been generated and the hundreds of people who have come forward in the last couple of weeks to tell us their horror stories.
We're speaking with Dr. Sam Sugar. He's the founder of Americans Against Abusive Probate Guardianship and State Representative Kathleen Pasadomo from Naples on Topical Currents. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Monday's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. We're talking about adult probate guardianship with Dr. Sam Sugar, the founder of Americans Against Abusive Probate Guardianship. And still with us is State Representative Kathleen Pasadomo from Naples, whose bill, HB 5, was just passed in the legislature. We have an emailer. We're going to take some calls and emails. Siobhan wants to know if the doctor could please define plenty, I guess when you're saying plenty of abusive probate guardianship cases. How big is the problem? 1%, 20%, 90% of the guardians?
I wish I could answer that question, but...
And it varies by circuit, I suppose.
Well, it's worse than that. The state of Florida refuses to keep records on the number or types of guardianships that exist in this state. We have information that helps us understand it. In Miami-Dade County, we know that there are approximately 7,000 guardianships active. which involve the four judges in this district. We know that approximately we can expect an additional 600 to 800 this year, and that approximately 500 will be terminated, meaning the ward will die. Across the strait, your guess is as good as mine. There may be 50,000, there may be 100,000, but there are lots of guardianships, and the percentages of for-profit versus not-for-profit guardians. There are 1,000 guardians in the state. 46% are for-profit. Okay.
And we'll take a phone call. This is listener Kelly in San Marcos. Hi. Kelly.
Hi, Kelly.
Hi. Yes. Hi. This is Kelly. Yes, I want to talk about the issues, and I'm interested to hear also from the attorney on this call about what happens to all the principle that is held with wealthy individuals that are put under guardianship. The wards can often earn substantial earned interest income and have other income streams from their asset. And all of that ends up being denied to the wards. And in my case, the court-appointed attorney misused his IOLTA account, his interest on lawyers' trust accounts, which all attorneys in all 50 states must keep. And when an attorney puts money in that account, all the earned interest income is confiscated by the state directly from the bank, and it is thus denied to the rightful owner of that money. And this happened in my mother's case, and I would like the attorney, this is one of the spin-off problems happens from bad guardianships. And when I brought this problem of the missing earned interest income to my judge's attention and to the attorney's attention and to the board that disciplines attorney in the state of New Mexico, which is where my mother's trust was, my case was dismissed without any explanation whatsoever. And this was allowed to continue. And I have never had my earned interest income returned to the trust. I don't think I'll ever get it.
That's getting very technical.
Yeah.
Well, let's just clarify. When you ask for the attorney, Representative Pasadomo, are you an attorney?
I am, but I don't practice in that area. I'm a real estate lawyer, so I think the other attorney who called in might be
more. He's not on the air.
All right, so let me try to jump in and answer this question, because it's a question that I have posed to the court here in Miami-Dade. And their response so far has been silence. We are concerned about IOLTA accounts and the implications of having IOLTA accounts where the interest and dividends from those accounts that really the principal belongs to the ward, we really don't know where the interest and principal goes. And I posed that question. I'm hopeful that the probate court will answer. Thanks for calling, Kelly.
I guess the issue, though, is, and that could have been a specialized matter, but these trust accounts, they have to be segregated for the individual wards. I don't believe they commingle them or should commingle them. So that if the in any event, if an attorney or any guardian misappropriates the funds of the ward, that is financial exploitation, and they would be subject to criminal penalty. The real problem, though, is auditing those accounts, because are those expenditures proper? I think they did a big study of these in Sarasota, the issue, and they found, as Dr. Sugar said earlier, that they were charging these guardians, and I don't know if this was a lawyer or not, $80 to open the mail of the ward.
Every day.
Those are the kind of things that are those, is that misappropriation or overcharging? And that's why I think our bill will hopefully put a little bit more teeth into this process.
And as you said, Representative, this opens up the real ultimate fundamental question is what role should the government play in these kind of family matters?
Well, I want to do something about that. We do not want to interject government into family relations, if at all possible. Because here's the thing. If a ward selects a family member that they want to be the guardian, that's their choice. And if that family member, and it happens, probably more often with family than with professional guardians. If that family member misappropriates those funds, should the government intervene because it is family or not? I think we need to have that as a discussion. We as conservative Republicans like to say we don't want to interject ourselves into family situations. So my goal in this bill, if you'll notice, we didn't really address the family situation. I wanted to first look at the professional guardians that are appointed by the court that are not related, and then, you know, then have the dialogue and sometime in the future, does the state have an interest in protecting people against their own family?
Yeah,
I don't know.
We're interested in having that dialogue next time.
We haven't.
I don't know if that's appropriate at this point, to be honest with you. I don't know. We should talk.
Okay, and we have an emailer. Clay practiced as a lawyer in the guardianship area for decades. To some extent, problems arise because the probate judges and staff are so overloaded with cases, it's impossible to give detailed oversight. Generally, the probate judges do an excellent job protecting their wards, whether from greedy guardians or selfish families. Problems sometimes occur when a family member initiates guardianship simply because he or she disagrees with how mom or uncle is spending their money. This concept has been summarized as, if he's spending my inheritance on that new girlfriend, well then, he must be crazy. The law requires judges to leave as much freedom as possible in the ward's hands and to only impose the least restrictive alternative. In my experience, the courts take that task very seriously.
And, you know, in an ideal world, that would be true. The law says, the statute clearly says, that the intent of the legislature is to use guardianship as the very last resort. But what we've seen is this, it has turned out to be the first resort, and that's what we're concerned about.
Let's quickly take another call. Jose in Fort Lauderdale. Hi. Jose, we're short on time.
Hey, hello. I'm a guardian of a minor, so it's slightly different, but I think it seems like the same situation. And here's my concern. I've been really frustrated with the whole process and how it works. When I was appointed, I got the briefing and the training on I have a fiduciary responsibility to work on behalf of the ward, and I was very diligent, and I am very diligent about that, but was restricted by the investment options and things to do. And what I have found is trying to protect the ward, all I've been is been fleeced by the courts and by the attorneys and by the banks in between, because I was required to invest in what was called Florida statutory accounts, and only certain banks, especially over here in the state of Florida, required you to invest in their protected accounts. And in order to do that, all their investments had loads. So everything I had available to me was being loaded off by the banks. And every time I had a complaint or an issue and I talked to the attorney, he would charge me for everything, for emails, for questions
right.
between them and the banks. And then the lawyer would charge me thousands of dollars on all these conversations.
Okay.
I ended up getting rid of that person.
Right.
And every time I try to go back and say, well, I want to change this, want to change that, they say, well, you got to go to the court in order to do that. You got
to
go and pay $500
an
hour.
We have to run, Jose. Thanks. We have to
okay.
run.
Thank you, Jose. Dr. Sugar?
Well, he's right. He's absolutely right in that family guardians have a horrendous situation where they're trying to do the right thing for a loved one, and they are under the same burden of law as professional guardians who have staffs. And it is not a good situation for family guardians either, and we have sympathy for them.
Well, we want to thank you. I wish we had longer. We were speaking with Dr. Sam Sugar, a retired board-certified specialist in internal medicine and the founder of Americans Against Abusive Probate Guardianship. That's AAAPG.net. And we were also with State Representative Kathleen Passidomo from Naples. Her bill was enacted into law, HB 5. It just awaits the governor's signature. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
And thanks for listening. Our producer is Richard Ives, technical direction by online producer Paul Leary. More information and free audio archives, it's best to go to our website, WLRN.org. And tomorrow's program is with our program's literary contributor, Ariel Gonzalez. He's an English professor at Miami-Dade. We'll hear his interview with the prolific English novelist Martin Amis, the son of the knighted Sir Kingsley Amis. Martin's book is Zone of Interest, which takes place among the brutality of the World War II concentration camp. Joseph Cooper with Bonnie Berman. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Here and Now from NPR News.